You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built for us. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_daddy. Well, I think it's time for us to take a little gander at day three, as well as try to look at some of these undrafted free agents, at least as far as my latest understanding of who we have. Again, it's going to be somewhat of a cursory overview because we have more people than we have time. So I think what I'm going to do is we'll hit PFF again. I do want to go to Brugler's thing. I'm not going to read it verbatim, but I'll pour through it for any interesting tidbits. Bob McGinn also has an article that once again is like talking to scouts, but I think because there's a lot more scouts than previously, he just empties his freaking Rolodex. He talks to everybody and he says, tell me what you think about this guy. I hesitate to even do it because the whole exercise, as I've said, is kind of stupid. As cool as it is, I wish it was cooler than it actually is. It's so great to be able to get insights from the people in the building. The problem is when they contradict themselves on every single prospect, it's a futile exercise because we already know how it's going to go. Somebody's going to say they're great. Somebody's going to say they're okay, but they need some work. And somebody's going to say this is the biggest pile of crap. I think he has a mental disorder. He's probably a cripple. I think he like burns puppies. I hate him. I hate his face. I think he's ugly and he stinks. Not like at football. I mean, he actually, the aroma is a little rough. But you know what? We only get one opportunity to kind of run through and see what scouts had to say. Obviously, in between, we're going to be able to kind of parse out a few things in terms of general ideas of strengths and weaknesses. So, and it's only through, I think, the first five picks. There's only going to be a handful of them, I believe. As we get further down, there's going to be less and less information. In fact, the last I checked, none of the undrafted free agents are on Dane Brugler's his thing, the Beast Draft Guide, which I was actually very surprised by because usually there are several, but I will double check that as we come to that. But why don't we get started? Day three of the NFL draft, mixed reviews to be sure. Not really surprising. I feel like we've broken into kind of similar camps. There are people who look at it and go, hey, great. I'm excited to look forward to it. Can't wait to see what these guys can do. And then there's the camp of, they didn't do what I want, they didn't draft according to the consensus board, they reached, I am the truth teller, I'm not a bootlicker, I'm not just going to be happy about things when they don't go the way I want, I'm going to throw temper tantrums because I'm the one who actually is telling the truth, blah, 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 blah. And again, I acknowledge that the hype is out of control. The Packers will always underperform the hype. That's always going to happen. But as long as somebody doesn't actually believe that everybody's probably going to be elite, and some people probably do, but even that I'm not going to be mad at. You know why? Because they're fans of a team. It's a game. We're playing games, and we're fans of a game. Just let people have fun. You can argue with them without being a D-bag. I mean, it's like me and Jacob. All right, we're going to argue about seventh-round picks. Listen, I would be so heartbroken if I changed his mind. I don't want to change him. He loves the underdogs. He's rooting for our seventh-round picks. That's a good thing. But I'm going to argue with him because I don't agree. It's just we're in different places. I don't want that to change. I don't want to change anybody. Fan how you want to fan. I want you to enjoy being a Packer fan. So I guess it's fan how you want to fan, but err on the side of please don't be a douche. You know what I mean? That would be great. That's like the one rule, I guess. Anyways, also, I double-checked it. It was the top five picks, not the top five rounds. So it's really just day one and day two, which we already did. So we'll circle back to the Bob McGinn thing another day. I'm not doing it today. I don't want to go back and double back on the guys we already talked about. Not yet. Not until we get through everybody. But all right, let's just quickly run through what the Green Bay Packers did. So as we know, on the first day, the Green Bay Packers selected offensive tackle Jordan Morgan. I think the consensus now is that he's going to try to replace David Bakhtiari at left tackle. If that doesn't happen, I think there's a very large consensus that if he can't beat Rashid Walker, he will be moved inside and will be a starting interior offensive lineman, at least temporarily. Day two, Green Bay Packers trade back. They end up getting linebacker Edgerrin Cooper. And then the second round pick, they got safety Javon Bullard. In the third round, the first pick in the third round, they took running back Marshawn Lloyd, a smaller, thicker hammer. And then the second third round pick, they got Tyron Hopper. Now, this is one of the harder to understand prospects in terms of he was expected to go significantly later than he went. So this will be interesting to see kind of how he plans or how he pans out. And if he's able to do, you know, what it is the Packers need him to do. He's coming to a group, obviously, with Quay Walker and Edgerrin Cooper, so you assume a lot of that heavy lifting will be done there. But still, if, for example, he is expected to be the starting weak side linebacker, which I think is the plan. I mean, I can't imagine he's going to be the strong side or Mike. And I also do like, I mean, my preference is, and I said this about Edgerrin, I kind of like him as a Mike linebacker. I like Quay as a strong side linebacker, so everything kind of fell into place. But either way, I mean, can Tyron Hopper be that guy? I mean, that sort of suits his skill set. But is he going to be, does he have enough of that skill set to be able to do that? Be interesting to see. Then day three rolls around. And with the fourth round, which is the Packers money round, the Packers take another bit, I don't want to say of a head scratcher, but another one that would be kind of considered a big reach. And that is safety Evan Williams out of Oregon. Now, we didn't do a very thorough investigation, but we pulled up highlights as they came through, and it wasn't easy to really start to fall for Evan Williams. Very easy to get excited about the guy. Now, you know, there are the grades, there are the analytics, there is actual watching him play football, not just highlights, but very similar in style in that he is a downhill type of a guy, used a ton on blitzing. So it'll be very interesting to see how this shapes out. Now we have Xavier McKinney. We went out and got Javon Bullard, and then we get Evan Williams. And there's some question about perhaps Javon Bullard playing in the slot. Now it's also possible that Evan Williams is a backup safety behind Javon Bullard. But obviously the Packers didn't take Evan Williams in the fourth round with the expectation of him being depth. They don't use fourth round picks on depth, at least. That isn't the long-term vision ever. In the fifth round, they take interior offensive lineman Jacob Monk out of Duke. Now, the one hole that needs immediate filling, at least in my estimation, maybe they kind of like Sean Ryan and think that he's turned a corner or can or whatever, but my assumption is that's where he's going to slot. However, he is has some interior versatility, meaning he can play guard or center. And obviously, Josh Myers, I'm assuming they're going to hang on to him for at least one more year, see if he can kind of turn it around. So I think Josh Myers will be our starting center with Jacob Monk at guard and then Jordan Morgan at tackle. At least that's sort of the vision. But especially if Morgan can't really win the tackle job or they feel as though he's better inside or whatever, it's possible that somebody else could end up taking that guard slot and Jacob Monk is competing for the center slot. But I think best case scenario at this point, they've got Jacob Monk at right guard. Then in the fifth round pick 169, one of the more exciting picks, guy that a lot of us have been talking about incessantly, Katon Oladapo out of Oregon State, another safety. So this is where you look at it and go, okay, now we really think that Bullard is going to be playing in the slot. But at the end of the day, you know, again, the Packers aren't necessarily coming into this with defined roles. It's about finding talent, letting them come in and compete, and just making sure that you've got some guys that can raise the talent level. at the position, however that shakes out, whether it's McKinney and Oladapo or McKinney and Bullard. I mean, it's going to be McKinney, but who's going to be next to him? What the rotation is going to look like, possibly, you know, packages, sub-packages. You might have situations where it is, you know, Bullard is primarily going to be a safety, but if they, you know, let's say in base and then in nickel, he goes down into the nickel spot, and then you might see, you know, one of the other two safeties come on the field. Then in the sixth round, Green Bay Packers select offensive lineman Travis Glover, another guy with a lot of versatility. He is first and foremost a tackle, but has played a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, he has played guard. He played about 50% guard in 2022. But either way, I tend to think he is a developmental tackle, similar to a lot of the other developmental tackles that we've gotten somewhat later. You know, Rashid Walker being one of them. Then in the seventh round, the Green Bay Packers pull the trigger on quarterback Michael Pratt. One of the very surprising picks, not so much because the Packers did it, but because he survived as long as he did. My thought process on it was, this is not something the Packers really wanted to do. I think he was probably an option for some time. And then when the seventh round rolled around, you figure, why not, you know? And then maybe the most interesting prospect, at least to me, on day three is Kalen King. He was our last pick. He was one of the last picks in the entire draft. And he is the only pick that has got people all over the NFL buzzing about how elite he is. Not only are current Green Bay Packers talking about how good Kalen King is, Sauce Gardner tweeted out that Kalen King is an absolute stud. I mean, it's a very interesting thing because at one point, Kalen King was kind of at the top of the world. He had an unbelievable breakout season. So he played in 2021, played about half a season, right? So he's kind of a not full-time starter, had an okay season. In 2022, he gets his first crack at being a starter, and he is just elite. Elite, 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 elite. 91 coverage grade, right? Just incredible for basically a first-year starter at the age of, you know, 20 years old or whatever. Probably 19 by the time he started that job. And so he is a first-round prospect at the start of the 2023 season, right? He is expected to go in the first round. He has a very rough 2023 season and almost goes undrafted. And apparently a lot of people did not forget about 2022. So that'll be something that'll be very interesting to keep an eye on as we go through the offseason, kind of see if we can get more backstory on it, et cetera, et cetera. But really interesting and unusual. I mean, it's honestly unusual that he lasted as long as he did because, I mean, guys like that slide. They don't usually slide that hard. I mean, our entire draft class last year was comprised of people that had really good seasons 2 years ago, but not as good the previous year. I don't know if any of them were considered first-round picks at some point. Like, Dontavian Wicks was good, but nobody was talking about him being a first-round prospect. All right, let's get started with Evan Williams. He is a safety out of Oregon. He spent 4 years at Fresno State. His two final years there, it looked like he was a starter. He had an 80 PFF grade and then a 77 PFF grade, which kind of across the board. So his final year at Fresno State, it was 77, 82 run defense, 67 tackling, 75 pass rush, and 70 in coverage. Then he transfers to Oregon, has a 76 grade, 72 run defense, 73 tackling, 89 pass rush, and 72 coverage. He is an incredibly talented pass rusher. He had 8 pressures on 20 pass rush attempts and 5 sacks. Evan Williams was the 15th ranked safety via Dane Brugler. 5'11", 206, 22.7 years old, youngest of two boys, born in Los Gatos, California, grew up in the Bay Area, wanted to follow in the footsteps of his brother Bennett, started playing Pop Warner football, eventually enrolled at St. Francis High School, a Catholic school in Mountain View, played both ways wide receiver DB, obviously did track, that's just something you have to do. He was a 3-star recruit, number 137 safety, the number 167 recruit in California. Got his first scholarship offer from Illinois, where his brother played. He was heavily courted by FCS teams, UC Davis, Holy Cross, Portland State, San Diego. Also received offers from Ivy League programs, Columbia, Harvard, and Princeton. That's a big deal. There's two guys that we drafted, I believe, that have that. You don't get recruited by Columbia, Harvard, and Princeton unless you are a very intelligent person. A week before signing day, he added offers from Fresno State after former offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb, now offensive coordinator at Alabama, pushed for him. Williams signed with the Bulldogs and was the eighth-ranked recruit in head coach Jeff Tedford's 2019 class. He was planning to return pro after his fourth season at Fresno State, but an early-season knee injury in 2022 led him back to college football. Williams said, quote, "It was a setback. I feel like I didn't put my best on film." For his final season, Williams entered the transfer portal and heard from several national programs like Arizona State, Florida, Florida State, and Washington. But he was drawn to Oregon because of the knowledge he gained from his brother, who'd earned all Pac-12 honors as a defensive back with the Ducks, following stops at Illinois and college at San Mateo. His father, Gary, who coached his two sons through Pop Warner in high school, played safety at Cal and was a member of the kick return team for The Play in 1982. Williams accepted his invitation to the Senior Bowl, blah, blah, blah. Some of the positives here: high football IQ, not surprising. High success rate as a blitzer. Active on special teams coverage and had a blocked punt and blocked extra point attempt on his college resume. Scouts say he has a good head on his shoulders and his personality on and off the field will fit well in NFL locker rooms. Obviously something the Packers care a ton about. He did have an MCL tear in his left knee in September of 2022 and missed four games. Had a right hand injury September 2023 that caused him to miss one game. Re-injured his hand and wore a bulky right club for the final three games. Overall, Williams doesn't have the playmaking instincts in the deep half of the field, but he is an energetic field presence with a trigger and toughness that are easy to appreciate. He projects as a backup strong safety and core special teamer in the mold of Alohi Gilman. He gave him a 5th to 6th round grade. Moving on to Jacob Monk out of Duke. Monk was a 5-year starter at Duke, started even year one in 2019 with 759 snaps at right tackle. He then had 817 at right guard, 753 at right guard. Then in 2022, he played 203 snaps at center, 441 at right guard. 2023, 18 snaps at left guard, 336 at center, and 350 at right guard. So primarily he played right guard, 2,361 snaps. After that was right tackle, even though that was all 1 year and it was his rookie year, 759 snaps. After that was center with 539 snaps, and then left guard, 18 snaps. The grades are not massively flattering, although he's kind of, I hate to say this, Sean Ryan-esque. So really, he had a 65 PFF grade this past year with a 63 run blocking and 68 pass blocking, which is not very good. However, I say he's like Sean Ryan because Sean Ryan was interesting in that he was either like elite as a pass blocker or hot garbage. And that's kind of what you're getting from Jake Monk here. You've got, for example, starting in week 2, 85, 80, 35, 29, 82, 70, 70, 30, 65, 70, 75, 83. So especially early on, you got 80, 80, 30, 20, 80. I mean, that's Sean Ryan stuff. It's like elite, elite, garbage, garbage, elite. So I have to assume the Packers are looking at it. They're seeing the upside of him as a pass blocker, and they're going to work on the guy in hopes of, you know, getting more of the good and less of the bad. We'll see how it goes. Anyways, Jacob Monk out of Duke, 6'3", 308, out of Clayton, North Carolina, 22.89 years old, youngest of four kids, grew up in Clayton, southeast of Raleigh. At age 8, started playing football. Monk earned All-Conference 3 consecutive seasons, was named All-USA Today North Carolina as a junior and senior in high school. Of course, he did track. He was a 4-star recruit, number 27 offensive guard, number 20 recruit in North Carolina. He went to several camps, picked up scholarship offers from East Carolina. That summer, several local programs like Duke and NC State also offered him. Monk later added offers from Oregon and a few SEC programs like South Carolina and Tennessee. But he was a legacy at Duke, grew up attending Blue Devils football games, and wanted to sign where his father played. Monk was the number one recruit and former head coach David Cutliffe's 2019 class. His father rushed for 1,149 yards as a 4-year letterman at Duke and later joined the Dallas Cowboys as an undrafted free agent. His uncle Quincy, who died in November of 2015 from adenocarcinoma, played linebacker at North Carolina. He was drafted in the seventh round of the 2022 NFL draft by the New York Giants. His older brother, Trey, played one season on the defensive line at Division II Pembroke. His older brother, Miles, has Down syndrome and autism, and his family is very involved with special needs programs. Monk took advantage of an extra year of eligibility granted because of the pandemic and returned to Durham for a fifth season in 2023. He graduated with a degree in African American Studies. I remember I was going to take a class. I think it was African American Studies because I had to take like one ethnic studies class. And I went in there and I'm like, this, you know, I'm here for a finance degree. I don't need any of this information. So I'm expecting this to be not a difficult class. And I walk in and day one, the professor there said something to the effect, like there was a stack of books. And he's like, if you're not prepared to read every single one of these books, this isn't going to work. And I was like, yeah, bro, no thanks. And I ended up taking Asian American Studies. And that was every bit the blow off class I was hoping it was going to be. It was like a kindergarten class. It was amazing. Anyways, some of the positives. Again, this is going to be a common theme among every single one of the guys we drafted. Two-year team captain and comes with strong character reviews. Goes on to say durable, started 58 games during his career. Double-digit starts at three different positions. Some of the negatives, he collected 20 penalties during his five seasons as a starter, including several holding flags in 2023. Missed two games in 2022 because of an injury. Started more games at right guard and right tackle in college, but is viewed as a center-only prospect by several NFL teams. I don't believe the Packers view him as that, but that doesn't mean that they don't feel he's the strongest there and may strongly consider putting him there. We'll see. Some other notes here. Earned all ACC honors in his final three seasons. Second best 10-yard split among centers at the combine. Coaches rave about him as a teammate and a worker. Overall, Monk doesn't have elite size and strength, which puts more of a premium on his technique, but his foot quickness and football IQ belong on an NFL roster. He projects best as a backup center who can fill in at guard in a pinch. Fair enough. All right, why don't we take our first break? We'll come back and take a look at Mr. Oladapo. We'll be right back. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built-for-us. In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We get all hyped up thinking we're going to get some high-value Jordan Love card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now, introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view on all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now when I buy Slab Packs on Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And honestly, the best thing for me and my son is the fact that we're kind of novices into this. When I walk into a card shop with my son, and a card says it costs $40, kind of just taking his word for it that that's a good value. So I appreciate the transparency on grading, as well as just getting excited about seeing what you could potentially get. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/packdaddy. Wow, that's crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's 40 bucks right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/packdaddy for 10% off your first purchase.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, Ketan Oladapo. 5 years at Oregon State, the last 3 years as a starter. 2021, he had a 74 grade. 2022, that went up to an 80. In 2023, that went up to an 88. That is a heck of a jump, especially when you consider in 2020, he didn't start, but he played 244 snaps. It was a 49. So it was 49, 74, 80, 88. Going across now, 88 defensive grade, 91 run defense, 78 tackling, 67 pass rush, and 84.4 coverage. Now, to be clear, he's a little bit more of an inconsistent prospect. That doesn't mean that there was a lot of bad. In fact, there was only one game that was, I guess you would call bad, that was against Arizona, 49 grade. But the 88 is heavily influenced by, for example, he had a 93 grade against Stanford. It just means that there's a lot of average mixed in. So just kind of going down, it's 70-70, I'm rounding. 70-70, I'm not even rounding. It's so 77, I'm calling a 70. It's just what category is it in? 70-70, 60-60, 60, 70-60, 40, 50, 90-80, 60-70. So again, not terrible, but it's also not elite. So from week 3 through week 10, for example, one good grade. It was 60-60, 60-70, 60-40, 50. I tend to think that's common among safeties. I don't know why. I don't know if it's maybe because they don't really impact the play as much. So, you know, you give up a touchdown, it can be pretty devastating, or, you know, depending on run support. I don't know. I'm not really sure. But anyways, overall grades out phenomenally, has incredible upside. You know, we've got the 80s and the 90s mixed in. We've seen the trajectory going straight up through the roof through the years. There's a lot there that's pretty solid. Dane Brugler had Katon Oladapo as the 11th best safety with a 4th to 5th round grade on him. And it might be Oladapo, to be honest. Katon Oladapo. I think it is Oladapo. Anyways, middle child of three. His parents, Funky and Akin. Bro, if his dad's name is really Funky, or his mom's name, I'm not sure. They're of Nigerian descent. He was active in sports throughout childhood, primarily a striker and defender in soccer. He ended up playing football in sixth grade, but his mom was not happy about it. She objected to it. Oladapo went to Central Catholic High School. Oh, by the way, 6'2", 216 out of Happy Valley, Oregon, 23.5 years old. He was just 5'6", 135 pounds when he went to high school. Sophomore year, he hit his growth spurt, moved to corner. As a senior, he got second team All-State, first team All-Conference honors. He also played club rugby as a wing during his junior and senior seasons. He was a no-star recruit, wasn't ranked by recruiting services in 2018, went widely overlooked, and didn't receive a scholarship offer. Oregon State did offer him a preferred walk-on opportunity, however, and he accepted. During his redshirt year, Oladapo moved from cornerback to safety, a position he hadn't played before. He took advantage of an extra year of eligibility granted because of the pandemic and returned to Corvallis for the sixth season in 2023. His younger brother Cash plays collegiate soccer as a goalie at Portland State, following 2 years at St. Mary's College. His older sister Anjola was on track and field team at Lane Community College before transferring to Portland Community College and then Oregon. Oladapo, who is known for changing his hair color from game to game, graduated with a degree in design and innovation management from Oregon State. Again, one of the strengths, which is going to be a recurring theme, former walk-on, was voted team captain in 2023. We drafted a bunch of team captains is what we did. I'm mad about it. Negatives, there's not a ton. Doesn't have an extensive special teams resume as expected for a six-year safety. And then, of course, will turn 24 years old during his rookie season. By the way, I lied. Looks like the article by Mr. Bob McGinn did come out. So real quick, Evan Williams, first of all, just nobody liked him. Just get that out of the way. They've got some stats here. Eighth safety drafted. He was tied for the second best vert, tied for the largest hands. And then talked to four different scouts, and mostly just they didn't care for him a ton. Jacob Monk, fourth longest arms among the top centers. Nothing really interesting there as far as stats. One AFC scout said, we didn't have great grades on him in the fall, probably should have after the fact. NFC scout says he's an athletic zone scheme center who flashes good initial quickness to get in front and covers guys up. Marginal play strength, struggles to sustain blocks at all levels. Gets in the way, and the runner must quickly hit the hole behind him. Well respected for his work ethic, smart player who can make the calls if needed. Best projects as a center. Feels like whoever that scout is exactly the scout that talked to Dane Brugler. Different AFC scout says, I think he's going to make it and be on a roster for a long time. He thinks he actually trends better as a guard. Big, strong, tough, smart, has exceptional wiring. Kid's better than Sam Mustipher. He had a pretty nice postseason. His workouts were pretty good. He's got great makeup. If you get this guy as a free agent, he's going to make your team. There's not enough centers ever. He's done it, and he's not bad at it. I will take that. And then Mr. Oladapo, since we're here. Oh, by the way, they do have the Wonderlicks, or at least for him they do, Wonderlick of 16. It's hard to find that outside of Bob McGinn. He's the only one that reports those. Heaviest of the top 12 safeties, failed a drug test in April 2019, undependable and unaccountable during portions of his 6 years at Corvallis, not regarded as much of a worker. Didn't know any of that. That's interesting. One NFC scout said, I like him as long as he's close to the line of scrimmage. He can run with guys in space, but his game is close to the line. AFC scout says he's primarily a strong safety, big physical guy. He'll have a chance because of special teams, maybe even go linebacker. Didn't love him as a player. Late third, early fourth, said an AFC scout. Another AFC scout said he's going to change his hair color once a month. He's going to be late to meetings. He's sort of just out there. He's a bigger safety. He will hit. He's more of a traditional safety. Again. Which is it, dude? Final AFC scout said, I really thought he was a good football player, strong safety or free safety. He has range and safety cover ability. At times, he wants to kill people instead of just wrapping up. I would rather tame a guy than try to get him to be aggressive. That's 100% true. He'll be 24 the first year on October 20th. So Oladapo is a little bit different than the typical Green Bay Packer. I mean, the fact that he was voted team captain, and Gutekunst, I think it was Gutekunst, talked about, you know, it's one thing to be a captain, right? It depends. How do you become a captain? Are you just appointed by the team? More importantly, like, do you actually lead? Do players actually follow you? That kind of stuff. So they genuinely believe he is a leader and not necessarily even talking about commanding a locker room, but commanding respect. Still, to have a guy that's a little bit more, let's say, right-brained, a little bit more, you know, lighten up, what's the big deal, kind of artistic, go with the flow, calm down, bro, you know, might not necessarily show up to meetings on time. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, if that's actually going to be an issue or not. I don't think the play is the problem. Obviously he, again, is very well liked, but you don't want to see, especially if this guy is well liked, you know, if somebody that is a fan of the locker room starts going in a bad direction, you can see how we have seen how that could potentially pull other people along with them in the wrong direction. And then when you seek out to rectify the situation, you're the bad guy and the team kind of turns on you. I think the Packers are very, very cautious. They always have been, but I think they're, especially Gutekunst, has been even more so simply because of how bad things have gotten at times with these kinds of situations. So we'll see. Something to keep an eye on. All right, why don't we take our final break? We've got three more prospects to get through, so we might have to pick up the pace picante sauce a little bit. And I don't know if we're going to get to undrafted free agents today, but that'll be the plan. We'll see how she goes. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. All right. Sixth round pick, Travis Glover, offensive tackle out of Georgia State. 6'6", 317 pounds from Vienna, Georgia. 23.69 years old. Grew up in a stoplight small town in central Georgia. Attended Dooley County High School and started taking football seriously his junior season of high school, so did not play very early, still very new to the sport. Started on offensive and defensive line, earned an invitation to the Georgia Elite Classic All-Star Game, which helped him to get noticed. He won first-team All-State All-Region honors, he lettered in basketball, joined the track team, and earned the Most Improved Award. He was a three-star recruit, number 170 offensive tackle, and the 190 recruit in Georgia. After his first season of varsity football as a junior, his recruitment picked up steam in the offseason when he received his first official scholarship offer from FCS Jackson State. His second offer and his first SEC offer came from Mississippi State. FAU and Lane Kiffin made a hard push as Glover reached the finish line, and he held Power 5 offers from Pac-12 schools like Arizona and Oregon State. But he decided to stay in-state and commit to Georgia State. Number 9 recruit in the Panthers 2018 class. He did graduate with his degree from Georgia State. Don't know what that is. I mean, I know what a degree is. I just don't know which degree he got. He's durable, missed only one game in 59 games played, started 45 straight to begin his career. He did have standout weeks at the Hula Bowl and the Senior Bowl. Overall, Glover isn't an explosive athlete, and achieving leverage will be a constant battle for him, but he also isn't a slug and looks for ways to unleash his power in all areas. Given his experience at both tackle and guard, he can provide depth at multiple spots on the team's depth chart, 6th, 7th round. So, as mentioned, 5 years at Georgia State, as far as the grades go on PFF, really lacking up until this final year. He had kind of a breakout year. So his run blocking has been pretty consistently average to not great. Started, by the way, right away. So 900 snaps, which is actually the most that he's played in a season in his rookie season. But his run blocking grades went 40, 50, 60, 50, 60. His pass blocking grades went 40, 70, 50, 60, 80. And even from a consistency standpoint, the pass blocking was pretty phenomenal. Only had 3 games that were not 70s or 80s. 2 of them were 50s, but they were high 50s, basically 3 games in the 60s. Gave up 4 sacks, 3 hits, 5 hurries, 12 total pressures. He's played 2,400 snaps at left tackle, 426 at left guard, and 1,306 at right tackle. So primarily been a tackle. We're talking almost 4,000 snaps at tackle compared to 400 at guard. As for Bob McGinn's article, he had a Wunderlich of 24, which is pretty solid. I'm not super well-versed on Wunderlich, but I feel like, you know, sub-20s, in my mind, 20s are kind of average-ish. I don't know. I just know if you're in the single digits, that's rough. If you're in the 30s, you're super smart. Outside of that, I'm a little fuzzy. Let's see, he did 20 reps on the bench, which is relatively low. Joined the Senior Bowl at midweek as a replacement player. Only 2 scouts on this guy. oh, my Lord. Let's start with this one. NFC scout says, knows who to block, but not how to block them. Consistent, you know what you're going to get. Not an overly tenacious or nasty player. Stiff in his pass sets, late to redirect and adjust. He's tall and plays tall. Gets by on pure size more than anything else. Slow feet, tight lower body. You really like the size, and he's very experienced as a player. Football intelligence is fine. It's his technique that's an issue. Mature, grounded, upbeat, well-liked. It matters to him. He's done well to stay in shape and keep his body fat down. So that is a scout that has really done his homework on this guy, right? He knows all about the guy, and it sounds like he's a project. He needs work on his technique, but he's very intelligent. He's a very hardworking guy. Oh, and by the way, he keeps in shape and his body fat is down, okay? Next NFC scout says, fat guy. Showed up at the bowl games. He's big feet, no feet. He ain't my cup of tea. Free agent for me. I think, like, some of these scouts take their job seriously, and some of these guys are like, I was watching Casino last night. I've been watching it for like 3 days straight because I keep falling asleep. I watch it at night, but they were talking about how, you know, all the guys on the ground are doing all the work and making all the money, and then you got the guys back home in the Midwest who are, you know, just sitting around complaining about everything. And you got these guys, you know, they're all overweight. They're smoking cigars. And you're like, oh, it's no good. It's no good. You can't be doing that. You know, we gotta do better. The first NFC scout is like the guys on the ground. They are super intelligent. They know everything that's going on. They are in all the details. They're working to make every single penny. The second NFC scout is the guy back home who doesn't even know. He couldn't begin to tell you how the operation even works, but just wants his suitcase full of money and expects everything to go smoothly. Jeez. Mature, grounded, upbeat, well-liked. It matters to him. He's done well to stay in shape and keep his body fat down. Second scout, fat guy. Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Fat guy. Who says that? He's a tackle, dude. What do you want? Next up, we've got the quarterback Michael Pratt out of Tulane. Dane Brugler had him as the number 8 quarterback and had a 3rd to 4th round grade on him. Michael Pratt, 6'2 and a half, 217 pounds, out of Boca Raton, Florida, 22 and a half years old, youngest of 4 kids, born and raised in Boca Raton. Growing up in an athletic family, he played basketball, football, and any other sport he could get his hands on. Spent a lot of time fishing and hunting, played baseball. He was homeschooled by his mother, Rory. After 8th grade, he made 2 major changes. He stopped being homeschooled and convinced his parents to let him play organized football. My whole life I always wanted to play, but I wasn't allowed until high school. Pratt enrolled in Boca Raton High School, played freshman quarterback for the JV squad. Looking for better competition, something that actually challenged him, he transferred to Deerfield Beach High School, joined a team with an established quarterback, Daron King, along with several FBS commits at skill positions, Xavier Restrepo, Bryce Gowdy, Aiden Henningham, Dewan, a bunch of guys I've never heard of were at this school, apparently. After he missed a few weeks of the season because of an abductor injury, he took over the starting job, took him to a 10-4 record in the 8A semifinals. 3-star recruit, number 47 pro-style quarterback, number 178 recruit in Florida. After his junior season, he had offers from Toledo, followed by Tulane, Western Michigan, Kent State, and FAU. With a 4.0 GPA in high school, Pratt also was highly recruited by several Ivy League programs, including Brown, Cornell, Columbia, Dartmouth, Harvard, and Yale. So that was the other guy I was talking about. Very intelligent, which the Packers very much like. Committed to Tulane in June, was the number 13 recruit in head coach Willie Fritz's 2020 class. After 3 seasons at Tulane, Pratt was wooed by several Power 5 programs, but the school's Fear the Wave NIL collective helped convince him to stay put in the 2023 season. I don't know a ton about NIL, but I find this interesting. So they have NIL collectives. What, we have like a pool of money that we throw at players and stuff, and they actually name it Fear the Wave. So there's a pool of money called Fear the Wave, and they use the money to pay Michael Pratt. I would love to know how much money he made, because I have a feeling he made more money in college than he's currently making in the pros. Anyways, his older sister Hannah played college basketball at Columbia, averaged 9.8 points, blah, blah, blah. Grandfather Chris Jones was a swimmer at Long Island University. Oh, he competed in the 1964 Olympic trials. That's interesting. Teammates and coaches unanimously praise his character and competitive habits. Former head coach Willie Fritz said, "I'm guessing he probably works 350, maybe more, days a year on his craft." It's fantastic stuff. Started 44 games the past 4 seasons and leaves Tulane as the school's all-time leader in several categories, including total touchdowns and total offense. He missed 1 game as a sophomore because of a concussion, missed 1 game as a junior because of a shoulder injury, and played through a painful heel fracture late in the season. Missed 2 games as a senior because of a left knee injury, including a matchup versus Ole Miss that NFL scouts had circled. Overall, Pratt might not have high-level physical traits to carry an NFL offense, but you don't see panic in his game, and he has natural sense for where to go with the football. He projects as a quality NFL backup with starting upside in the right role. And then our buddy the Scouts. Interestingly enough, rifle-armed Nicky Hall, another Green Wave quarterback, was drafted in the 10th round by the Packers in 1981. Scouts say, "I like his size, his arm, his presence. He's been a pleasant surprise. He can end up being a starter in time. I like his ability to distribute from the pocket. He's a little bit better athlete than expected from a testing standpoint. From the down-the-line group, he'll be one to rise up. It's because of how he handles himself in the pocket and how he sees the game and how efficient he is." AFC Scout says, "I'm not sold on him. The Raiders took Aiden O'Connell in the 4th round. He's not as good as O'Connell." Final AFC Scout says, "I was really high on him after 2022. He got hurt 2nd game this year and did not play well. Backup type, physically gifted, inconsistent decisions. I'd like to work with the guy. He can run 4.7 to 4.75. The negative this year is holding the ball. Last year, I really thought he had a chance to be a top guy. He's a nice athlete. He's mobile. He's good. He's got a good arm. I'd like to take him in the 4th or 5th to work with him." So even the guys that don't really like him would acknowledge that it's a pretty good value in the 7th round where we got him. But all right, let's get to the grand finale here. Mr. Kalen King out of Penn State. Dane Brugler had him as the number 26 corner, 5th to 6th round grade. 5'11", 190 pounds out of Detroit, Michigan, 21.24 years old. Kalen King has a twin brother, Kobe, born and raised in Detroit. Twins were introduced to multiple sports throughout childhood, but they gravitated toward football as early as age 5. They often worked out and trained with their father, Tadarrell, and they were very, very fierce competitors. Kalen King idolized Charles Woodson and wore number 2 throughout his football youth and high school. He attended Detroit's Cass Technical School and was a 4-year varsity letterman in football, helped the program to a 2017 conference title. As a freshman, King became the starting cornerback as a sophomore. As a junior corner and wide receiver, he earned All-State honors with 25 tackles, 1 interception, etc., etc. As a senior, he was captain for the second straight year and led Cass Tech to 12 wins in a season abbreviated by the pandemic. He earned the second of back-to-back All-State, All-Region, and All-City honors. King also ran track and was one of the leading scorers on the basketball team. He was a 4-star recruit, number 16 cornerback in the 2021 recruiting class, the number 8 recruit in Michigan, the number 1 DB in the state. After his freshman season, he received offers from Iowa State. Here he got his first offer from Iowa State. He also added a few MAC offers, but the big one from Michigan arrived after his sophomore season. King grew up attending Wolverines games at Michigan Stadium and watched several local players like Donovan Peoples-Jones and Jordan Lewis star in Ann Arbor after Cass Tech careers. Kalen and Kobe were considered a package deal, and they announced a Final Five in Arkansas, Iowa, Michigan, Penn State, and Wisconsin. Despite having grown up Michigan fans, though, they developed close relationships with Penn State coaching staff, and Micah Parsons hosting them for the official visit was the clincher. King was the number 2 recruit in Franklin's 2021 recruiting class. His twin brother, who is older by 1 minute, redshirted in his first season at Penn State and is now a rising junior linebacker. Be something interesting to keep an eye on next year. King elected to skip his senior season and enter the 2024 draft. He accepted the 2024 Senior Bowl invite. Some of the positives here. Developed a relentless self-confidence to bounce back from negative reps. It's obviously incredibly important in corners. Described as super competitive and coachable by Penn State head coach James Franklin. Experience on kick and punt coverages. 222 special teams snaps. Some of the weaknesses, his 1.95 flying 20 was the worst among all cornerbacks who ran the 40-yard dash at the combine. A little bit over-aggressive, quite a few penalties, very limited experience in the slot. Disappointing 2023 season as he struggled against the best opponents on the schedule, Ohio State, Maryland, and Michigan. That was, I think, the main thing that came out about this is when he was really, really dominant, he was the number 2 corner, and then the next year he became top guy, went up against top competition, really, really struggled. It says he put himself on the NFL radar with a standout 2022 season, number 3 in the FBS with 21 passes defended, looked like a future first-round pick. However, cornerback is a volatile position. King's 2023 tape exemplified that. Managed just 2 passes defended in his final college season, although he saw fewer targets, and struggled against top opponents on the schedule, most notably a tough matchup against Ohio State's Marvin Harrison Jr. Overall, King is a fluid athlete with the aggressive play personality desired for the position, but his inconsistent tackling, coverage, spacing, and feel for when to take chances will continue to result in volatility in his game. He is viewed as a possible safety candidate by several NFL teams. So we got one safety who might be moving a corner and one corner that maybe should be a safety. All right, McGinn's little tidbit here. Ran a slow 40, blah, blah, blah. First NFC, so there's kind of a lot of scouts here. First scout says he's third day. He was supposed to be the anointed successor to Joey Porter, but he's not because he got emotional, competitive, I'm not the guy issues. He doesn't want to be the guy. He's got some issues. All right. AFC scout says, don't watch Ohio State. It was the worst game he ever played in his life. He doesn't play with confidence of a guy with his athletic ability. You'd like having him in the locker room. He's kind of going down. There was a little bit of a hype on him in the preseason. His tape from 22 is better than 23. 1 week could go out and play good. Then against Ohio State, he got the you-know-what kicked out of him. He's just a really inconsistent guy. Should have gone back to school. He's a free agent. He's just not very good. Another NFC scout says he won't be on some people's boards with that kind of time, But this kid will play in the league. He has size, quicks, instincts, long arms, and was aggressive in both phases of the game. An AFC scout says, I didn't like that guy at all. I don't see it. NFC scout says, I like teammate Johnny Dixon a little more than King. Final NFC scout says, I thought I was going to see a lot more. Decent athlete, really good instincts, struggles in man coverage at all different levels. Ankle biter in run support, backup zone type guy. Coming into the process, he was way up there, and then it just ... So, all right, we're not going to get into all of these guys, but as of right now, as much as I know, the undrafted free agents that have signed with the Green Bay Packers, Alcorn State running back Jarvion Howard. He is a 5'10", 220-pound running back. Go figure. They got tight end Messiah Swinson out of Arizona State. He has a 1.5 RAS, which is surprising, but he's 6'7", 260. So I would assume we've got a 6'7", 260-pound tight end who's not very fast or agile. I wonder what his role is going to be. You think he's trying out to be the new Luke Musgrave, or maybe they want to see if this guy can block? They got a few more tackles, one of which is Donovan Jennings out of South Florida. He has almost a 9 RAS. He's 6'4", 323 pounds, ran a 5.02 40-yard dash. Then there is Trenty Jones. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. He is 6'3.5-ish, 305 pounds. RAS has him with great speed, okay agility, and good explosion. We got defensive tackle James Esther out of Northern Illinois, 413 RAS. He's 6'2", 289 pounds. Rodney Matthews, defensive tackle out of Ohio. And the one everybody's excited about, Wisconsin long snapper Peter Bowden. So we'll see how that goes. Anyways, I'm going to leave you with that. You guys have a good rest of your day. I will talk to you tonight, tomorrow, whatever. Have a good one. Bye-bye.